Chapter 64. Pitt refused to fly home on a stretcher. He sat in a comfortable executive chair, leg propped on the seat of a facing chair, and stared out the window at the snow-capped spires of the Andes. Far off to the right he could see the green plateaus that marked the beginning of the Brazilian highlands. 2 hours later a distant gray haze advertised the crowded city of Caracas. And then he was gazing at the horizon line where the turquoise of the Caribbean met a cobalt blue sky. From 12,000 meters, the wind-creased water looked like a flat sheet of crepe paper. The Air Force VIP transport jet was cramped. Pitt could not stand to his full height, but quite luxurious. He felt as though he were sitting inside a rich kid's high-priced toy. His father was not in a talkative mood. The senator spent most of the flight working out of a briefcase, making notes for his briefing to the president. What little conversation took place was one-sided. When Pitt asked how he happened to be on the Lady Flamborough at Punta del Este, the senator didn't bother to look up when he responded. "A presidential mission," he said tersely, closing off any further questions on the subject. Hala also kept to herself and attended to business. She had the aircraft's in-flight telephone in constant use, firing off instructions to her aides at the United Nations building in New York. Her only acknowledgement of Pitt's presence was a brief smile when their eyes happened to meet. How quickly they forget, Pitt thought idly. He turned his mind to the search for the Alexandria Library treasures. He considered cutting in on Hala's phone monopoly for a progress report from Jaeger. But he drowned his curiosity with a dry martini, courtesy of the aircraft steward, instead, deciding to wait and learn whatever there was to learn at first hand from Lily and Jaeger. What river had Venator sailed before burying the priceless objects? It could be any one of a thousand that course into the Atlantic between the St. Lawrence in Canada to the Rio de la Plata of Argentina. No, not quite. Jaeger theorized the Serapis had taken on water and made repairs off what was to become New Jersey. The unknown river had to be south, much farther south than the rivers that flow into Chesapeake Bay. Could Venator have led his fleet into the Gulf of Mexico and up the Mississippi? Today's stream must be far different from what it was 1,600 years ago. Perhaps he had sailed into the Orinoco in Venezuela, which could be navigated for 200 miles. Or maybe the Amazon? He let his mind wander through the irony of it all. If Junius Venator's voyage to the Americas was absolutely proved by the discovery of the buried library artifacts, history books needed to be revised and new chapters written. Poor Leif Erikson and Christopher Columbus would be relegated to also-ran footnotes. Pitt was still daydreaming when he was interrupted by the steward telling him to fasten his seatbelt. It was dusk, and the aircraft had dipped its nose and was dropping into the long glide toward Andrews Air Force Base. The twinkling sprawl of Washington slid past, and Pitt soon found himself hobbling down the steps on a cane hastily bent from an aluminum tube and presented by the grateful crew of the Lady Flamborough. He set foot on the concrete at almost exactly the same spot as on his arrival from Greenland. Hala came down and bid him goodbye. She was continuing on with the plane to New York. "You've become a treasured memory, Dirk Pitt. We never did make our dinner date. The next time you're in Cairo, it's on me." The senator overheard and came over. "Cairo, Miss Camille, not New York?" Hala gave him a smile worthy of the beautiful Nefertiti. "I am resigning as Secretary General and returning home. Democracy is dying in Egypt. I can do more to keep it alive by working in the midst of my people."
"What of Yazid?"
"President Hassan has vowed to place him under house arrest." A frown crossed Senator Pitt's face.
"Be careful. Yazid is still a dangerous man."
"If not Yazid, there is always another maniac waiting in the wings." Her soft, dark eyes belied the fear that rode in her heart. She gave him a daughterly hug. "Tell your president Egypt will not become a nation of insane fanatics."
"I'll pass along your words."
She turned back to Pitt. She was on the brink of falling in love with him, but fought her feelings with every bit of will she possessed. Her legs felt weak as she took both his hands and stared upward into his ageless face.
For an instant, in her mind's eye, she saw herself entwined with his body, caressing his muscled skin. And then, just as quickly, she erased the thought. She had found brief fulfillment with him, long denied, but she knew she could never divide her love for one man with that for Egypt. Her life belonged to those who had no life except misery and poverty. She kissed him tenderly. "Do not forget me." Before Pitt could answer, Hala had turned and hurried up the steps into the aircraft. He stood looking at the empty entrance for a long moment. The senator read his thoughts and interrupted them. "They've sent an ambulance to take you to the hospital." "Hospital?" Pitt said vacantly, still watching as the door closed. The jet engines whistled as the pilot increased the RPM and began to taxi toward the main strip. Pitt tore the bandages from around his head and face and threw them into the jet's exhaust, where they were caught and sent swirling through the air like airborne snakes. Only when the plane was airborne did he make his reply. "I'm not going to no damned hospital." "Overdoing it a bit, don't you think?" the senator said with paternal concern, fully knowing it was a waste of breath to preach to his independent-minded son. "How are you getting to the White House?" asked Pitt. The senator nodded toward a waiting helicopter about 100 meters away. "The president arranged my transportation." "Mind dropping me at Numa?" His father looked at him slyly. "You're speaking figuratively, of course." Pitt grinned. "You never let me forget which side of the family my sadistic sense of humor came from." The senator slapped his arm around Pitt's waist. "Come on, you crazy nut, let me help you over to the helicopter." The tension built like a twisting knot in his stomach as Pitt stood in the elevator, watching the numbers rise toward Numa's computer complex. Lily was standing in the foyer as the doors parted and he limped out. She wore a big smile that froze when she saw the tired, bedraggled look, the long scab on his cheek, the hump of the bandage beneath a knit fisherman's turtleneck sweater borrowed from his father, the dragging leg and cane. Then she bravely broke out the smile again. "Welcome home, sailor." She stepped forward and threw her arms around his neck. He winced and groaned under his breath. She jumped back. "Oh, I'm sorry." Pitt clutched her. "Don't be." Then he mashed his lips against hers. His beard scraped against her skin and he smelled of gin, and delightfully masculine. "There's something to be said for men who only come home once a week," she said finally. "And for women who wait," he said, stepping back. He glanced around. "What have you and Hiram found out since I left?" "I'll let Hiram tell you," she answered airily, taking him by the hand and leading him across the computer installation. Yeager charged out of his office. Without a word of greeting or sympathy for Pitt's wounds, he came straight to the heart of the breakthrough. "We found it," he announced grandly. "The river?" Pitt asked anxiously. "Not only the river, but I think I can put you within 2 square miles of the artifact's cavern." "Where?" "Texas. A little border town called Roma." Yeager had the smug, complacent look of a Tyrannosaurus Rex that had just dined on a Brontosaurus, named for 7 hills just like the capital of Italy. Pretty low, insignificant hills, I admit, but there are also reports of Roman artifacts supposedly having been dug up in the area. Scoffed at by accredited archaeologists, of course, but what do they know? "Then the river is the Rio Bravo, as it's called in Spanish." Yeager nodded. "Better known on this side as the Rio Grande." "The Rio Grande." Pitt repeated the word slowly, savoring each syllable to the full, finding it difficult to accept the truth after dozens of missed hunches, wild guesses, and dead-end speculations. "It's really a great shame," Yeager suddenly said morosely. Pitt glanced at him in faint surprise. "Why do you say that?" Yeager shook his head heavily. "Because there'll be no living with the Texans as soon as they learn what they've been sitting on for the last 16 centuries.